Highland zoning board meeting, December 2nd, 2010.
I can call the meeting to order, if you could join us in the pledge of allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If you would please remain standing, I think we'll have a moment of silence. A member of the board's father-in-law just passed away, Mr. Harry Cefalo. Thank you. Okay. First item on the agenda is motions for adjournment. Zoning Board Case 2010-2, Metro PCS, New York, LLC. There is a letter on the table this evening, and they are requesting a postponement until our January 6th reorganization meeting, and that's case block 108, 2.0, lot 2.01, 450 Highway 36. They were, actually this was supposed to be on this evening, for people here for that, that case. We got this notice in the middle of the week, or I got the notice in the middle of the week, that they were not going to proceed this evening, so we're now going to be dealing with another case this evening. Yes, the same property, different application. I see no reason why we shouldn't put them on for our January meeting. Does somebody want to offer that?
I'll offer it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any questions on the motion? Roll call.
Mr. Bryce
is absent. Mr. Ryan's absent. Mr. Fox?
Yes.
Mr. Anthony?
Yes.
Mr. Gallagher?
No, here he is.
He's
not here.
Mr. Tierney?
Yes.
Mr. Katosh?
Yes.
Mr. Moore? Yes. And I've
skipped
one item here, and that's roll call. We should
yes.
have a roll call.
Let's wave that. Mr. Braswell's absent. Mr. Ryan's absent. Mr. Fox?
Here.
Mr. Anthony?
Here.
Mr. Gallagher? Mr. Britton's absent. Mr. Mullen?
Here.
Mr. Tierney?
Here.
Mr. Katosh?
Here.
As per requirement of Public Law 1975, Chapter 231, notice is hereby given that this is a regular meeting in the Borough of Highland Zoning Board of Adjustment, and all requirements have been met. Notice has been transmitted to the Asbury Park Press and the Two River Times. Notice has been posted on the public bulletin board. Okay. First item, or second item on the agenda this evening is hearings on new business, Zoning Board Case 2010-3, Quick Check Corporation. I should make an announcement. The case that I just mentioned, the Metro PCS case, will not be heard this evening. We just postponed that hearing until our January 6th meeting. So if there are people here for that particular case, there will be no evidence or hearings this evening, and we'll proceed with the calendar, which is Zoning Board Case 2010-3, Quick Check Corporation, Block 108, Lots 1 and 2.01, 440-450 Navasink Avenue. This application is a bifurcated application for a use which isn't permitted in the zone. And we have representing the applicant, the attorney of?
Henry Kent Smith. I'm from the firm of Fox Rothschild. I'm the attorney that's representing Quick Check tonight, presenting to the board a bifurcated use variance application on Block 108, Lots 1 and 2.01. To just give the board a basic orientation, this property is at the triangle of Ocean, Route 36, and Orchid. Right now, there are two buildings on one lot. Is, I'll call it the doghouse, because that's the big sign on the building. And on the second lot is a Stewart's drive-in. Quick Check is proposing to acquire both parcels and consolidate them into a single proposal that we are presenting to the board tonight solely on the issue of the use. I guess for a preliminary, Mr. Baxter, we've submitted the notice materials to you and the board.
Yes,
is everything in order?
I'm just gonna wait till you're through, but I'll pick up here. I reviewed the public notice and notice to property owners, find the same to be in order, properly served. It's my opinion the board has jurisdiction to proceed. It's my understanding that there's there's at least one objector or a group of objectors that are represented by counsel. Is that the case, Mr. Drobin?
I represent an interested party, correct.
Okay, do you want to just indicate your name for the record?
Sure. Paul Drobin, the law firm of Claire Ryan, on behalf of the Highlander Development Group representing that property.
Are there any other attorneys in the room that are representing any interested parties in this case? Okay. Do you want to explain the procedure?
Yes. What we usually do is we collect all the evidence that you're going to be relying on in your presentation, so we have it already marked, and as you bring it into evidence, we mark it into evidence. The process is that the applicant will call witnesses on their behalf to demonstrate the appropriateness or of this use. The board will get an opportunity to question those witnesses. The objector's attorney will get an opportunity to cross-examine those witnesses. Members of the audience will then be given an opportunity to ask questions of that same witness. If we've gone through one witness, we would go on to the next witness, and the same process on that.
Sounds good.
I've pre-marked or at least assigned numbers to the item. So just for the purpose of, you can keep that one, Demi. For the purpose of the record, A1 will be the variance application, which is 3 pages plus a disclosure statement that's attached to it. A2 is a rider to the application, which is 3 pages in length. It's with a background and legal analysis attached to it. A3 is a certificate of concurrence, which is signed by the property owner. A4 is a use variance plan set done by Jeffrey Martell of Bowler Engineering. It's 3 sheets. A5 is a November 5, 2010 traffic assessment letter report by Charles Olivo and Matthew Welch of Stonefield Engineering and Design, LLC. And B1, we'll mark, is our board engineer Joe May's review letter dated November 30, 2010. Whenever we swear in Mr. Smith's first witness will simultaneously swear in Mr. May.
Also, as a matter of clarification, A3 is the authorization affidavit for both landowners that are party to this application.
Right. Okay, Mr. Chairman, now that we've got all the jurisdictional stuff out of the way, let me just introduce to the board what we are proposing, which is a quick check convenience store, freestanding, that will have as part of its function the service of gasoline. And you're familiar with quick check because we are literally two lots down, the car wash, and then the next little shopping area is where quick check is presently located. So that we will be discussing with the board the relocation from that present spot to this new location and why we are proceeding with the facility that we're proposing. The property is in the HO zone, and under your zoning ordinances, gasoline service is not specifically permitted. And under your ordinance, if you're not specifically permitted, then I have to come in front of this board for a D1 variance, use variance for a use not permitted in the zone. So tonight, it's our intent to present to the board the overview of the site, as well as our concept plan. However, we are not yet ready to proceed on the site plan application itself because we first need to get the use variance. If we don't get the use variance, we're not going anywhere. So we wanted to bring this to the board to get the board to concur on the use, at which point then we will design the fully engineered site plan and be back in front of this board with the fully engineered site plan for site plan approval, and that will be a necessary, it's actually a statutory condition for a bifurcated use variance that we come back to this board for the site plan. I have 4 witnesses that I'll present tonight. Frank Marciano is our director of real estate and is the representative of Quick Check and will be able to answer any questions the board may have regarding Quick Check. The next witness is Jeffrey Martell, who is the professional engineer that prepared the concept plan that is before the board tonight. The third witness is Mr. Charles Olivo. He's with Stonefield Engineering. He is our traffic expert. He did the traffic analysis that we submitted to the board and will discuss issues related to traffic. Our fourth witness is Christine Caffone. She is a professional planner, and she has done the analysis of the master plan and zoning ordinances and will present the planning testimony to support and justify the board's grant of this variance if they so choose. So without any further ado, I'd like to call Mr. Marciano as my first witness and have him explain to the board QuickCheck's plans for this property.
Okay, Mr. Marciano, you want to raise your right hand, please? I swear the testimony you give before this hearing be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Will you state your name, spell your last name, and give your address, please?
Frank Marciano, M-A-R-C-I-A-N-O. I work with QuickCheck. We're located in White House Station, New Jersey.
All right, and Mr. May, do you swear the testimony you give before this hearing be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
And you're Joe May, the board engineer.
Yes,
sir. And there's two the other fellow, too, the planner.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot your name.
Mark Weber.
Mark Weber. Mark, do you swear the testimony you give before this hearing be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
And how do you spell Weber?
Mr. Marciano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marciano, can you just describe to the board what is your job for QuickCheck? What do you do?
Yes, I am a real estate manager for QuickCheck, and my primary function is to seek new locations for development, whether they be brand new locations or, like the case tonight, a relocation of an existing facility.
And what is it about the present facility that has moved QuickCheck to look at this location for a new convenience store and gasoline service?
Yes, first of all, just a background, I'd like to thank the board for allowing myself and my team of professionals to really share a little bit about QuickCheck, a little further than what you know maybe perhaps now, and what direction we're going in the future. So tagging on to that, as you know, well, you don't know the name necessarily, we have 125 locations. We operate in central and northern New Jersey and in the Hudson Valley of New York. 27 of those 125 locations are similar in design to the application that's before you this evening, where it's a convenience store with the gas component or gas fueling opportunity. The evolution of the convenience store chains have been such that it meaning the gas component, becomes a necessary addition, and it completes basically a one-stop shopping opportunity for the folks in a particular neighborhood. And in this case, as Mr. Henry Kent Smith mentioned, that we have an existing facility, our desire would be to bring that up to a more, conventional or more updated facility, which would increase the size of the convenience store, but approximately 4,500 square feet, plus the implementation of the gas facility. So in our stores, our function inside is we sell grocery products, we have food offerings, hot and cold sandwiches, soups, salads, we have coffee, of course cigarettes. We also have a banking component, I'll call it. We have an ATM, a no-fee ATM. So what I'm illustrating is a one-stop shopping opportunity for the customer in the area, not only to get those items, but also additionally a one-stop shop for the gas component as well. We also would like to do this location because I think it provides an added benefit to the community and to ourselves, in that this development will allow us to have control of the maintenance and the upkeep of the facility. Where we're located now, we're in a shopping center. We always like, in these new designs, maintain the control ourselves. We do have an in-house maintenance department that would, you know, basically keep the properties in good condition.
So the QuickCheck now owns and operates. It's not like you franchise this out, right?
We are a privately held company. We don't franchise at all. This facility, this meaning the existing facility, is open 24 hours a day. We would continue that. We currently employ I think it's about 12 employees. There will be an increase. Typically, these facilities that you see before you this evening, we would hire somewhere between 35 to 50 folks from the local community, of course.
You have 12 currently at the quick check?
I think it's about 12.
And that would increase to 35?
35 to 50, yeah. We do hire, you know, a lot of part-timers, and, you know, it'd be three shifts and all. And also, just minimally, but the implementation of the gas facility, being, of course, in New Jersey where it's not self-serve gas, we'd have, you know, two, three employees, four employees outside at the time periods. So there's an addition there.
And you're primarily hiring from the local community, right?
Absolutely. We hire from within.
Now, in terms of how this proposal is presented, the gasoline component, can you just talk a little bit about how much gasoline, how many deliveries you're going to get, and just talk a little bit about how that operates?
Sure. Facility like this would typically have approximately five times a week one tractor trailer with, you know, a gas storage fueling truck coming to the facility. In addition to that, as you'll see on the plan, we do have a dedicated loading zone for deliveries. So the smaller box trucks, we have, I don't know, five or six per day, five times a week that deliver snacks, small items like that, you know, the potato chips and small snack items. And then we do have an additional tractor trailer, probably two times a week on average, that delivers our milk products and frozen foods. And that's, you know, obviously geared toward that dedicated loading zone, which is another benefit to this facility.
Yeah, and for the gasoline deliveries, you control that, right? That's a quick check exclusive contract for that delivery, so you can control the times and how that delivery is actually accomplished.
Yes, we control the times and we control the component. In addition, just to add on, we do have the proposal is for four storage tanks. So it helps with basically limiting the number of deliveries that you have, and also giving the opportunity with the six fueling positions, or actually 12 fueling positions, excuse me, we can really serve the customers. We do design our facilities both inside the building and outside where it's spacious, it's easy to maneuver, and it's very safe for the customers. So what I mean by that, and you'll hear in more detail with from our engineers, the design is such that it's spacious, safe. You know, we have wider parking stalls so that, you know, a customer coming in can open their door and not necessarily ding the car next to them, that kind of thing. We try to design that. That's all part of the convenience aspect of our design.
And that includes, like, why you have the number of parking stalls that you have, so that there's plenty of parking and adequate for your customers, right?
Ample and safe. Those are two key, you know, the key component being safe, easy access, and easy maneuverability both on and off-site, and even inside the building, as a matter of fact, with wide aisles and stuff.
Is this place going to have sit-down tables? Like, seeing some Cortex now, they're going to start to put tables in for people to sit down and eat?
Yes, we provide, in this particular facility, I believe it's six-seat indoor seats, and that's basically, we're not a waiter or waitress service, we're not a restaurant, but it basically provides a convenience for a customer to come into our store if they want to have a cup of coffee and, you know, read a newspaper, or perhaps, you know, get a snack at, you know, breakfast, or in between breakfast and lunch, or what have you. They do have an opportunity, rather than buy the product, go out to the car and sit in the car, you know, if they're not going on their way, of course, then this provides another convenience aspect of an opportunity for them to sit down and relax for a few minutes, not clutter a lot with potential litter and things of that nature. So we've designed our facilities to incorporate that component as well.
So there's going to be enough design into it for parking places for somebody wants to sit out there and drink, customers and employees?
Yes, I believe it's ample. And again, our traffic and engineers can answer that in more detail, but yes. I believe there's 41 proposed parking stalls without the gas, fueling positions.
Now, you were talking about part of your discussion is the security aspect of how QuickCheck operates on these new facilities. Can you explain a little bit about how the having this type of an operation with the person outside and the person inside, how that affects your security?
Yeah, first of all, you know, a quick look at the design, it provides a good sight line from outside, you know, outside in the lot, and inside the building we have a lot of glass, so there's a good opportunity to view outside and inside from a security standpoint. Of course, we'll always have at least one individual employee outside at the gas facility, even, you know, late night hours. We also have state-of-the-art, I don't know the number, but we have a lot of camera systems all around the building. We provide a lighting, you know, a lighting for adequate lighting for safety. And it also, what I just mentioned about the visibility both inside and outside, even, for example, if a police vehicle, as an example, were to come onto our site, they can drive around, they can see outside and see inside our building because of the visibility issues. So that's another design component that we'd like to incorporate.
And you work regularly with the local police department in terms of assuring that this site is adequately policed and that you're cooperative with the local police
Absolutely.
Department.
Fire department as well for any needs of that nature, yes.
Okay, and then finally, in terms of this overall proposal, would QuickCheck proceed with this redevelopment if you didn't have a gasoline component? If the board said, nope, sorry, no gas, is this something that's essential to your business?
Yes, we would not proceed. We need to develop, from our estimation, we'd like to develop what we have proposed here because, well, for a lot of reasons. Of course, first and foremost, we believe that it would meet the needs a little bit better of the entire community, and of course, it would provide us with a better business opportunity as well.
Now, this would be, you have a facility right now on the other end of Route 36, right, in Hazlitt?
Yes, we do.
And so what we're proposing tonight, if the board wanted to see how it actually operates, that the Hazlitt facility would be a good living example of.
Perfect. It's on Route 36, actually a little bit larger. I forget the size, but it's got to be probably 5,000 plus square feet, the building. And then it has 8 fueling positions, so it's actually a little bit larger, but it's definitely very similar in terms of the design and the offering and such.
You mean 8 twice as 16? Or?
I'm sorry. We have 6 pumps here, 8 pumps there.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I confused that.
Okay. I thought you said 12 earlier.
12 fueling positions. 6 pumps, 1 on each side.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I should have been clearer on that.
And I have no further questions for Mr. Marciano. Board members have.
When you have fuel deliveries, when do they normally occur?
Fuel deliveries? We can control those.
Yeah. And when do they normally occur in your business cycle? When is the preferred delivery?
Well,
time?
You know, let me answer it this way, if I might, if you can indulge me. From a perspective of the operation of the business, it doesn't matter from that perspective because we have ample room to fuel and to not be obstructive to the customers on the lot. So from that perspective, I don't know if that's necessarily answering your question candidly, but it doesn't matter from that. That's why if they came in the middle of the day, if that were to happen, there's enough room to have the fueling, you know, the fueling operation go on at the same time as to not be intrusive to the customers.
And our
is
site,
he the right person to talk to about yeah, where
our,
this
Yeah, our
occurs?
Site design engineer actually is the better person. Okay. He's got that all laid out. So he's the one who could really explain that to you, Mr. Chairman.
I think the chairman's question was, what's the norm? Do they normally deliver daytime, only nighttime, or mix? And what's
honestly, it's all different. It's all and we control that again. So I don't know that there's a normal. I mean, I really
well,
don't.
As an example, what's Hazlitt?
I've seen Hazlitt there in late morning going by, so I don't know. And again, you know, the delivery is about 5 times a week.
5 times a week?
Yeah, approximately 5 or
right.
6 times
okay.
a week.
Can I ask a few questions?
You bet. Mr. Fox.
You said you had a no-fee ATM?
Yeah.
That's going to go in? Is that at the current facility too?
I think so. I can't remember honestly seeing it there. I believe it is.
You always want to find it. Don't be, you know, those are valuable.
I saw it there. Just for future reference.
I think it's there. I think so.
And then you said you would be hiring strictly from the local community?
It's generally what we do. We certainly give an opportunity to the local community first. And again, in this facility.
How are you going to know for sure?
Well, honestly, we won't know for sure, but, you know, we have 12 or 13, I forget the exact number of employees currently, and I'm sure, you know, my guess would be that they would all come over, and my hope would be, and then we'd add the additional employees, but certainly, you know, it makes sense to hire. We encourage that from the local community for a lot of reasons.
Well, you know, you're going to be right on the edge of our community.
I understand. So I can't guarantee that. I understand.
Just to
Yes,
that's all I have.
In your analysis of this site, was the location influenced by the fact that you have fairly good traffic in the summer from the Hook and whatnot?
Yeah,
and you assume that there'll be a fair amount of stop and go from that?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that we, of course, evaluate in any selection of a site is the numbers and really what I like to refer to as the quality of the traffic going by. So you're on, a major highway on 36. Even, my perspective, from a competitive situation, I think it's a perfect site for a convenience store and a gas station facility. But we do look at the number, and again, we have a traffic engineer that can verify the numbers of cars and stuff. But that's clearly
the one numbers of cars that are likely to use your facility.
Well, both pass by as well as, because again, we are generally operating. We're not a destination business like a big box, for example, a Home Depot or something like that. We primarily operate by pass-by traffic in the local community, the local residents and the local workers. That's the predominance of our business, comes from what's already there in terms of traffic. I think he had a question. I'm sorry, you couldn't see, Mr. Chairman.
Can we go back to the employees? You say currently you have 12 at the existing site?
I'm sorry.
You have 12 employees at the existing site currently?
I think it's about 12.
And that gasoline facility plus the enlargement of the building would make that fourfold?
Yeah, it'd be about 35 to 50, somewhere in that range, yes.
Total. Is your current facility open 24 hours?
Yes, it is.
And these aren't all maximum. Yeah, that's a good question. What's the maximum number of employees that you would have at the facility at your peak period?
Probably about 12, give or take, at one time, yes.
Right, yes.
So 12 potential parking spots are used by your employees. Is that a fair statement?
You generally won't see 12. A lot of times there's part-timers that, have other means of transportation to the site. But, if everybody drove, it would be 12, yeah. That's not likely.
And you control where they park.
Yes.
In order to designate those spaces for them.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Anne-Marie.
So out of the 35 to 50 potential employees, you keep talking part-time. So how many of those jobs are full-time versus part-time? Just to give a sense of what the real economic
is. I'm only hesitating because the economy is dictating a lot of that today.
Right.
So today, it's, I would guess the percentage is probably, this is a pure guess, it's probably, 65% of that number is part-time, somewhere in that area. But it's also dependent on the economy, quite candidly.
Any other members of the board have any questions?
One more.
Mr. Fox.
Do you know offhand what kind of volume of business you get when traffic is heavy on a weekend morning in the summer on its way to Sandy Hook? Because, the jug handle aspect is it doesn't make it a terribly friendly opportunity to just drop in.
If I could defer that to the traffic engineer, he would really.
He's done that whole analysis.
If I could.
So he's really the.
I don't expect you to know.
No, he's more qualified with that. It's a great question.
I'll wait for him.
Yeah.
Any other members? Bruce? Oh, excuse me. Yes.
Just to clarify the deliveries, you said you control the gas delivery, and the food delivery, is that controlled by you as well?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, presumably they come off peak times.
We can control that as well, just like we do the gas, yes.
Okay, the off-peak, is it off-peak like late at night, or is it off-peak like midday?
Well, again, I'm not being evasive, but with the 125 stores, we do have control, so they're all different, to be honest with you. When there's no perceived problems within the community, we can do it in the middle of the day. Again, we do have the dedicated loading zone, which is separated. It's behind, in this case. It's behind, or generally either behind or on the side of a building. So it's kind of out of the way. So I hope that answers you.
I think the bigger concern may be the noise, not the ability to deliver the product.
Well, with noise, if we do our fuel deliveries, they shut off their engine. And the same thing with the freezer, or the tractor trailer that are delivering our frozen foods and milk products, shut it off.
Okay. Is the illumination level of the facility critical to the security of this facility? Yeah. In other words, could there be a time when there could be a lesser lighting level later on in the evening when your activities are slower?
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, I'd like to again defer that to our engineer.
Okay.
For specifics, but yes.
But to follow up on that, though, you actually have existing quick checks with gasoline service literally right next door to residents, correct?
Yes, we have several of those. Yes.
Several, and do you work with them, and you haven't had any problems with the neighbors?
Absolutely. We work with, you know, screening when we have to. We work with the direction of the lights and all those technical components. But clearly, to answer your question from a generic standpoint, by all means, we work to allow for ample light on the facility, but to decrease the spillover, clearly.
And our inside engineer can go into the details, Mr. Chairman, about how we accomplish that.
Thank you. Other members of the board have any questions? Mr. Drobin, do you have any questions?
I do. I didn't get your last name.
Marcian.
Mr. Marcian. How long have you been doing site selection work for?
For QuickCheck, I've been working with them just approximately almost 4 years.
And with regard to this site, was this site chosen because in any way, shape, or form, it was previously, a portion was previously a gas station?
I did not look at that. I looked at the merits of the physical location from a market perspective first.
Okay. Are you aware that part of the site was previously a gas station?
Yes, absolutely.
And are you also aware that there were some issues with the environmental issues with regard to that gas station that still may exist or still do exist?
I'm aware of ongoing, I'll call it potential remediation that is within the obligation of Exxon right now, yes, sir.
You say potential remediation. Wasn't there a remediation plan that was filed by Exxon with regard to this site?
Yes, I believe that was in 2009.
I could, Mr. Drummond, because I've been responsible for oversight on the due diligence of the property. ExxonMobil in 2009 had reported a discharge, which actually generated a filing of the Spill Act control number. ExxonMobil has done the preliminary investigation to determine the nature of what is the contaminants, which has been determined to be BTX and NBE, which are both constituents of gasoline. They have also done a vertical analysis, which is simply determining the various depths by which contamination occurs. The present plume is located in groundwater situated between 55 and 78 feet, and well below.
On this site, yes.
And because of the topography, it would interact further down the slope, closer to the surface. There has been then the next stage of investigation submitted to the DEP, which is a series of additional tests, well locations, so that there can be a further delineation now of the horizontal element, how the spread of the plume has occurred. That has been approved by DEP, but I do not believe that the wells have yet tested. No, I don't think they've been tested yet. So we're waiting for that next series of tests to occur, so that then that aspect of the plume can be further delineated. And then we are also working, we as a contract purchaser, obviously we're not going to acquire this property and assume a problem. You know, we're not in the process of buying lawsuits. So we are in the process now of engaging in further investigation of the property to ascertain soil levels. There's been a preliminary soil assessment, but there has not been a further soil delineation to fully determine if there is, in fact, any residual soil contamination left in the property. We're in the process of working with ExxonMobil on that so that we can be assured that the soil contamination levels have been appropriately and adequately resolved so that we're not going to encounter any soils issues. And then, obviously, we're going to be the catalyst, the hornet or the poke in the side of Exxon to assure that they move with all due diligence to complete the investigations necessary so that we can make a and Mr. Marciano can make an informed business decision as to whether to proceed by assuring ourselves that the environmental condition of the property is has been fully delineated, and that, I mean, you're, Frank, you're not going to buy this property unless you know where the contamination is and how much it is and what your potential liability is, right?
Absolutely not.
So I mean, we are working in tandem with that, so I'm able to complete that investigation.
And the purpose of having a use variance before you find out about whether the site is suitable or available is?
Well, it goes to the point of, you know, allocation of money, especially in an economy like this. If this board were to determine that this is not appropriate grant of the variance, then we don't have to spend any more money because we're basically not going to be able to develop here. However, if this board blesses that as part of our site plan, because now we have to actually do the design, the stormwater management design, all that, then we want to make sure that our investigation is complete on the environmental side, because the worst thing in the world to do is, you know, hey, we're going to put a detention facility here and uh-oh, it's contaminated. You know, so that is going to be a catalyst for us to continue to work with Exxon on the investigation to make sure that we have as much information as possible so that we can be assured that this is a viable development economically.
I'm sorry, Mr. Robin, you were...
Yeah, I'm just going to ask, so at this stage, you don't anticipate having any environmental engineer testify other than the information you just delivered?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay. But certainly, your representation is that the environmental situation along the ExxonMobil could adversely impact the site to such an extent that there may not ever be a gas station at that
point. Well, the question is actually to the witness. Yeah. Well, is that right, Mr. Marciano?
I don't think...
I know.
I don't think this witness is qualified to answer, and I can't certainly ask the attorney.
I understood he was making the decision whether to go with the deal or not. But maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah, I mean, the question to you, Mr. Marciano, is would QuickCheck close on this property, or as a prerequisite to your closing on the property, what does QuickCheck have to be comfortable with on an environmental level in making that decision to close? Explain to the board what you go through.
Of course. We, in this particular case, of course, we have to be confident that that Exxon, and as Mr. Henry Kent Smith just mentioned, we feel confident that we will be a catalyst in terms of helping this process get cleaned up. We also believe, and I'm not necessarily the perfect witness for this, but the implementation of what we're designing, as a matter of fact, not only will it be a catalyst, but, and it'll be explained further, we're not going to add to any potential environmental hazards because of a lot of reasons. You know, high level look at it is because we build a facility, first of all, that's, the tanks are higher than what any contaminations are now, contamination is now. And the way we design, it's the completely best state-of-the-art systems today, you know, the double wall and all that stuff that the engineers will explain. So I think that, again, to back up, we need to be confident, and it's my opinion at this point, clearly my opinion, that I'm moving forward with this deal because we believe that we're, you know, lining up our ducks in a row. The samples were taken. We'll know in about a week from now about the environmental issues. So we're on it. But it's just we're moving forward because we want to get this done.
So you indicate that you think you'll know in a week about certain environmental issues. Is that
it? Let me be clear. We'll have more information to be confident to move toward a prudent business decision. I don't want to make a statement that I'm going to know everything. That's my environmental engineers, and we've employed them, and we're working toward that effort.
Okay. You're not going to testify about lighting. I think that's
right. We have a professional engineer.
Let the record show that Art Gallagher has arrived.
810. As to the northwesterly portion of the property, it does exist another structure on the property, correct?
Yes.
And that structure is a communications cell tower monopole?
Yes.
And it's, I gather, not part of your application to indicate that that cell cell tower, correct?
Not at all. It will remain.
That's an existing cell tower.
And it will remain, yes, sir.
Well, but you are aware that there is another application that's pending to increase the height of that cell tower, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that is a application that you endorse as the contract purchaser? I mean, you're aware of it, so, and it will remain, and you understand it then moving forward. I assume I can ask you if you'll endorse that if you would own the property, because that is something that you're aware of and will continue in existence. And if this board approves the use variance, we'll go up in height by about 50 to 60 feet.
I'm not sure if you can clarify what you mean by endorse.
Well, as a contract purchaser, and I guess this is a more of a legal question, I guess as a contract purchaser, you have an interest in this property, and I gather that you were asked to, as a contract purchaser having an interest in the property, approve that application, you would. Just as the owners to this property, property you're purchasing, have approved your application.
We don't even have any control of that, do you, Mr. Mercier?
No, it's something, honestly, I wouldn't think about now. I have no control over that right now.
Isn't the question, if you're going to buy it with the intention of keeping the cell tower?
Clearly, yes, sir. Yeah, thanks for the clarification, exactly.
Even at a height of 100 and...
Whatever the height.
40 feet or 50 feet.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And you discussed with the board items that will be in existence at the site should you get a use variance and incorporate it to your site plan, 41 parking spots, your engineer, traffic engineer, for lighting. You said that you take great pains to screen your property. I know this is only a conceptual plan, but I see a lot of green surrounding the property. You also do that with regard to the cell tower area?
Well, actually, because I'm also doing the real estate due diligence, and as part of that, I assess title. And there is an easement that, what cell towers have done is, they used to lease land, and then they decide, oh my God, we can make so much more money if we actually acquire the interest in real property, stop paying the landowner, and we pocket the money. And that's what they did. It's a lump sum to the landowner, he grants an easement, and all of a sudden, QuickCheck is going to take title subject to that easement right, which includes an expansion right, which we have designed around. But it's no longer anything that we have any control over. It's like a utility easement. It's there.
So we
don't have control within the easement area.
So if I understand the question, QuickCheck, should they move forward with the use variance and get that approved, then move forward with the site plan, could do nothing with regard to the cell tower site, whatever that easement area is,
right.
Delineated. Leasing bounds or otherwise on this map, but you couldn't do anything in terms of screening or anything in terms of landscaping around the cell tower. But have it, and maybe somebody could tell me where that easement begins and ends.
Yeah, our engineer can do that.
Okay, and have it around that area. In other words, where the easement ends and where your property begins.
Yeah, no, we could do that. Yeah, but we can do it. No, the answer is yes or no. Can we do it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we could do that, yeah.
Board members.
Okay, are there any members of the audience that have any questions for Mr. Marciano with regard to the testimony he's given here this evening? Yes, ma'am, would you stand and identify yourself?
Hi, I'm Candace Kowalski. We reside at 1106 Highway 36, Atlantic Highlands. I had many comments to say. You spoke on behalf of many of the positive reasons
why you obviously want to live in that location. What would you say are negative possibilities that are going to occur from being there? Honestly, I can't think of any. I mean, the point is we've been in operation since 1989, approximately 21 years in that strip center. And I think, in my humble opinion, everything leans toward a clear improvement of the operation and really benefit to the community.
Okay, and anything in terms of maybe air pollution? Do they higher or heightened air pollution standards in the area?
We actually have a a part of our engineer, he's the one who would answer that question, because he's got that all that air quality stuff.
Okay. You said that many of the local Highlands people be working at the Quick Check, and I previously worked at Quick Check back in 1990, so I'm very familiar with a lot of the ins and outs of what happens in Quick Check, and I can say that most employees are very dissatisfied with many
of the... You can only ask questions, ma'am. Testimony.
You'll get an opportunity to do that.
You can do that later at the end.
Okay.
This is really just cross-examining his testimony.
Quick Check's very illuminated and bright and visible, but that you do make efforts to shade too, so it won't be a nuisance. But yet, isn't that still very, very bright and would change the lighting from the surrounding area from where it is now at night, since you're going to be a 24-hour operation?
Can you tell me what the question is?
I think she wants to know if it's going to be brighter.
How can you possibly shade most of the lighting so it's not a nuisance to the neighbors and residents that live in and around?
I would defer that to our engineers for the design purpose.
Can you say that with confidence that they would shade that lighting to not be a nuisance?
Yes, clearly I can say that with confidence, yes.
You said also that many of the delivery trucks in the middle of the evening or whenever they come turn off their engines during delivery so it's not noisy.
Mm-hmm.
How do you assure that that's done? Because we notice we get woken up from the pictures now by delivery trucks, monster trucks, and garbage collections taken. We hear that now. So I just wanted to.
Well, clearly what we'd want to do is we want to be a good neighbor, but first of all, from a practical business perspective, so any issues that come up in the course of our operation, we would address those as common, courteous business practices. So, you know, we'd work with any members of the community to ensure safety first, and also, you know, we don't want to be obstructive or abusive to any individual.
Is it in a business plan of who has a responsibility to oversee the noise of the customers that come in and out? I mean, I know that the state, local, they have ordinances, you know, with noise and relation to noise and times and such, but, you know, things still happen. I'm just wondering who of Quick Check tries to make sure that their customers, you know, and reference to, say, car radios and, you know, the public which comes in and out.
Keep in mind, most of our customers are from the local community, so I don't know how we can control the customers coming in terms of any abuses. However, this facility, again, being that we're not in a strip center, we have much more control in terms of being able to maintain that facility and is one operator on that lot that we own and control.
How are customers mainly from the local community when you said that you anticipate customers from Sandy Hook, the beach, the summer, Staten Island, New York, to State Highway 36. Most of the customers may not, in fact, be from the local area.
I don't think I made that statement.
I've noticed even just 3 weeks ago, I was at Hazlitt past midnight. I pulled in, I waited 20 minutes for the gas pump to come. I was using the bathroom because I know that Quick Check often usually doesn't give adequate break times to the employees. But he came out after using the bathroom, and I noticed there was three cars having a contest with their radio volumes. And I said to them, it's very loud and annoying. He said, yeah, I know, there's nothing that we can do. So nothing had been done. He said that they were there for 3 hours. I called the Hazlitt police and made a report. It took for an officer to come to shoot him away.
What's your question, man?
It's just a common thing that I've noticed in many gas stations, parking lots, is loud radios and people being out. I don't see how Quick Check could make efforts to stop that behavior. I don't know what you would recommend to do so.
I'll be happy to answer your question.
I think the question is, how do you control the customers who are noisy?
Do you have security policies? So, why don't you describe to the board what the security policies are in terms of, you know, how you control this?
Well, first of all, you know, just to digress for a moment, in terms of litter or anything like that, we're going to control that. So we will police our lot.
Security.
Well, security. I mean, if there's any problem, we'll have our employees that are on the facility, and we'll go out there and take care of any issue. Common business practice, right?
When you work with the local police in terms of just a situation a la and hazard, you're in contact with the police to make sure that there, if there is any disruptive behavior, it's dealt with and dealt with decisively, correct?
Yeah. Again, we go into any community as, you know, clearly beyond the normal business that we'd like to generate for ourselves. We go in as being a good neighbor, so we pride ourselves on that. And we would work in collaboration with the local police departments, with the neighbors. We would do anything within reason to make for, you know, a safe and pleasant environment. I mean, it's even good business.
Is this time really just for questions?
Yeah, there'll be other opportunities for you to speak on against the application or for the application, but it's really just a cross-examination of the testimony that he's given this evening. Before you go, Ms. Kozlowski, could I get the spelling and your address? Spelling of your name and address?
Candice, C-A-N-D-I-C-E, 1106 Highway 36, Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, 077.
We can't accept this. You can give testimony later, but you can't.
And your last name was? I didn't.
K-O-W-A-L-E-W-S-K-I.
Thank you, Ms. Kozlowski.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the audience that had any questions for Mr. Marciano? Seeing none, Mr. Marciano, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Frank. My next witness is Jeff Martell.
Mr. Martell, I'm going to raise your hand. You will swear the testimony you give before this hearing will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You state your name, spell your last name, give your address, please.
Jeffrey Martell, M-A-R-T-E-L-L, from the firm of Boulder Engineering, 35 Technology Drive, Warren, New Jersey.
All right. I don't think Mr.
Well, Mr. Martell, why don't you advise the board of your professional education, your qualifications and experience in the field of site plan engineering?
Sure. Again, Jeffrey Martell, professional engineer with the firm of Boulder Engineering, bachelor's degree in civil engineering from the University of Delaware, master's degree in engineering management from NJIT, working with Boulder Engineering for approximately 7.5 years, been responsible for approximately 100 commercial site plan applications, including approximately 20 to 25 gas station and convenience stores, provided professional testimony for approximately 30 land use boards in New Jersey.
And been accepted by all those boards as an expert in professional engineering?
Correct.
And in terms of your experience with QuickCheck, you've actually designed how many sites for QuickCheck now?
Approximately 25 that are constructed, and an additional 20 possibly between the permitting and construction process pending.
And in your in terms of your professional engineering, you work with QuickCheck as to their design standards, and you are fully aware of what they require in terms of all of their design and operational standards from an engineering perspective.
Correct. Our office has probably about 15 years of experience with Boulder Engineering in terms of their transition to gas sales. In 2001, I think, was their first station opened. Our office worked with them to establish those standards, and I've been working with those standards for the last 7.5 years.
So you're intimately familiar also, not just with the engineering, but also such aspects as the underground storage tank use, its design, installation, and operation?
Yeah, as part of our site design quote, this includes all the gas station elements as well, both from a design perspective as well as from an inspection perspective at certain sites, as well as an assistance in operational items as they come up.
I would submit Mr. Martell as the professional engineer as well.
Any board members have any questions? Mr. Drobin, is there any problem? Please proceed.
Great. I'd like to do very, very briefly, again, my role in this application, of course, is the site engineer. The site engineering plans that were presented are relatively conceptual. So my testimony tonight will be related to some of the gas station elements as it's related to the use variance. From a site engineering perspective, of course, as well as just to express to the board some of the due diligence we've done
in terms of establishing that this site can meet QuickCheck's needs in terms of site design and what have you. But of course, the kind of the hard engineering items, the grading, the stormwater management, the landscaping, even the lighting, I've heard some questions. In terms of the details of the engineering, we have not performed that yet to date. That would be a subject of a future site plan application. However, as Mr. Ken Smith has essentially alluded to with his questions, I've been involved with approximately 25 gas quick checks that are currently built. We will be employing a lot of the same design elements, so I may speak with a certain confidence and understanding what QuickCheck's future design elements will be based on my experience, although we haven't presented all of that in detail. But I'm confident that what I can express to this board this evening in terms of some of the details, especially as it relates to the lighting, maybe some of the things that we haven't presented in detailed testimony, that anything I testify to tonight could be made a condition of approval and carried forward to in terms of that future site plan application. With that said, the subject property is currently comprised of two lots. I will be entering in a number of exhibits tonight.
Let's mark them as we go along then. This is now going to be, we're at A5, we're now at A6.
Right, so A6 is an existing conditions aerial exhibit prepared by Bowler Engineering, dated 12/1/2010. Essentially, the purpose here is just to take a quick step back, pictures worth a thousand words, understand this property as it relates to
A6.
He wrote it on.
Oh, you did? No.
I did, but I'm more than happy to
see it. I see it now. Okay. That's all right. Either way. As long as it's clear. I didn't realize.
You got better handwriting than I did. So.
Makes it look official.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so this is an existing conditions aerial exhibit. Essentially, the property is outlined in yellow in the center of the page. For purposes of orientation, I'm going to refer to the top of the page as being north, to the right being east. Route 36, obviously a prominent frontage running to the left and right of the page. Essentially, this is two lots of which we're proposing to consolidate. QuickCheck would be purchasing both lots. The easternmost lot is lot one, which houses Mr. Ken Smith's dog house being the prominent tenant there. And then, of course, the Stewart's is along lot 2.01. For the record, the sum of those two lots is approximately 1.324 acres. According to a recently prepared boundary and topographic survey. The existing coverage on site is approximately 88% in terms of impervious coverage. There are a total of four access cuts on Route 36 currently and an additional three on Ocean Boulevard for the purposes of access. The property in general slopes towards the east following the topography of the roads. Adjacent land uses, I believe the aerial speaks for itself. Of course, most notably to the west is the car wash, existing QuickCheck, located in the strip center further to the west. And the other surrounding land uses are residential beyond the immediately adjacent roadways. I may enter in Exhibit A7, and identify it as preliminary site plan exhibit, also prepared by Bowler Engineering, dated 12/1/2010. This is essentially very, very, very similar to the use variance plan that was submitted to the board. But I do want to note, since the date of our submission, additional investigation and some preliminary analysis in terms of some of the site circulation elements have been done. This exhibit has been enhanced from what the board has seen with some of those additional design and analyses done, as well as we had not had available to us a boundary and topographic survey at the time that we prepared this plan. So since then, a survey was performed, and our concept was essentially overlaid onto that survey so we can accurately represent the property. And where this became very critical is in terms of establishing the exact lease area for the cell tower. By virtue of the exact dimensions of the property and the cell tower, there's one or two minor modifications to the site plan, but essentially it's roughly 95% identical to what you have. The prominent site features, of course, being the QuickCheck convenience store, 4,543 square feet. As was previously noted, there's six seats inside that convenience store. There are six fuel islands for a total of 12 fueling positions as part of the gas sales offering. That is beneath a canopy that is 90 feet by 47 feet. also proposing two outdoor seating table areas, each table having approximately four seats, so there's a total of eight outdoor seats as well. In terms of the parking layout, this plan represents a total of 39, whereas the plan that was submitted represents 41. Reason being, when we did the boundary survey, and we also did our research in terms of title with Mr. Kent Smith's office, we essentially found that there is not only an existing lease area associated with the cell tower, but there's also a small bump out, I'll call it, or an additional area for future expansion, and that's an easement that currently exists. For the purpose of representing on the plan, it's in the northwest corner, and it's immediately adjacent to the Ocean Boulevard right-of-way, extends down to the south to the back end of the fence housing the existing cell tower. That represents the existing lease area for the cell tower.
It's also and just for point of clarification, what we're talking about is a beige area. You have an area that's in beige.
Yeah, that's the improved area of the cell tower. Okay. It's approximately 55 feet from our Ocean Boulevard right-of-way, and it heads south approximately 55 feet, and it's approximately 45 feet in an east-west direction. That's the existing improved lease area as part, or the easement area, excuse me, as part of the cell tower. In addition to that, there is a 30-foot by 30-foot square area to the south of the existing cell tower that's also an easement has also been granted. And it's outside of the improved area today. We were not aware of that at the time of the original plan, so there's a minor modification to the parking area in close proximity to that, which results in approximately 39 parking stalls on the plan that this exhibit was prepared.
Does that represent the latest application for that?
Well, yes. Again, the site plan elements, where essentially this board is not approving any particulars tonight related to those site plan elements. We will result in 39, 40, maybe 41, maybe 38 parking stalls when it all comes down to the final design. This plan, what I'm showing you here, is that the site accommodates a minimum of 39 stalls, in my opinion, all of those being 10 by 20 stalls. So the important part of my testimony and my analysis to date is essentially to analyze this property from QuickCheck's perspective, to understand that it can accommodate the proposed use from a site engineering perspective. Do we have an adequate parking? Do we have adequate circulation aisles around the canopy, etc.? So this plan, again, represents 39 spaces, all of which are 10 by 20 spaces, a little bit larger than your normal parking stall, kind of industry standard, which is a 9-foot by 18-foot stall. In terms of the circulation elements around the canopy and around the convenience store, the site has been designed with the primary purpose of being convenient. Excuse me. You heard Mr. Marciano's testimony in terms of the importance of them owning and operating their own standalone facility. Some of the dimensional aspects of the site design are important in terms of that operation being efficient. What that equates to in terms of the design is a drive aisle in excess of 35 feet around the pump area. In between the pump islands, there is 28-foot drive aisles. So that provides safe and efficient circulation for customers in and around the fuel pump areas. The drive aisle to the south of the store, which essentially services a double row of parking on the north and south, that drive aisle is 25 feet. And then the rear drive aisle behind the QuickCheck building, which is a one-way drive aisle for the purpose of the loading, as well as some angled parking stalls to the rear, is 20 feet.
Can I ask you one question about
the parking
stalls? I got confused with something I read in one of the other reports. Do any of the parking stalls include spaces along the pumps?
My testimony to date, in terms of the numbers I've said, have all been exclusive of those pump
areas.
If you added essentially 12 fueling positions and said they were, mentally equivalent to a parking space plus the 39, would be up to 51.
Also, just as a point of clarification, is this a single use or is this two primary uses on the same site?
That is a nice debate that has been had at a lot of different planning and zoning boards. In my opinion, from a site engineering perspective, of course, not being an expert in planning and some of the other legal aspects of that question, but in terms of a site engineering perspective, I think the uses are separate in some of the design elements, but they act as one in terms of how the total customer experience for this. So we have, it's a difficult question to answer. We have
different employees. Well, let me make it real simple. We own and control both lots. We do not franchise. We will never sever the gas service from the underlying convenience store. Absolutely will not happen. So it's operating under one auspice, and that's QuickChek.
Right. I guess I'm one of my points is this two primary structures on the same property, or is this an accessory use and a primary structure? Or
It's clearly accessory. In other words, we're not going to want operate one without the other.
Yeah,
they operate in tandem. It's a single use.
Correct.
Where do you pay for the gas?
At the pump.
No, you don't do that.
Yeah. You don't?
Well, you have to give it handed to someone. Oh.
Yeah, there's a
kiosk there, right?
There's a kiosk, yeah. And there's separate employees. There's never, Mr. Marciano didn't state it on the show, there's never a dual role of an employee to be in the store and outside of the pump. So there's always an employee.
There's no payment in the store.
There's a kiosk, the credit card sales, cash, everything is taken at the pump.
Where are the tanks going to be located? Right in that small beige area, brown area that's in front of the pump?
Correct. We have really, from an operational perspective, the tanks are typically located in near proximity to the pumps. From purely a site design element, they could be located on either the northeast or south side. However, we've located them on the north side, which is actually different than the plan that was previously presented, because we found during some of our environmental due diligence that the original Exxon tank location was on the south side of the canopy. So we're essentially picking a new spot to put the tanks to create a physical separation between the old Exxon tank location and the new QuickChek tank location.
Can you describe how that actually operates? And just to follow up in terms of the underground storage tanks, just describe to the board what that installation is like, how they're designed, and how they operate?
Yeah, sure. Essentially, the QuickChek, in my opinion, does purchase and install the best equipment on the market in terms of what currently is available for gas sales operation. That includes the double wall underground storage tank in terms of the gas. You heard Mr. Marciano state there's four tanks, maybe two 20,000 and two 12,000 gallon tanks as part of this application. From there, there's double wall product piping, which is a plexiglass or fiberglass, piping from the underground storage tanks to the pumps. In terms of some of the finer elements of the monitoring and some of the safety equipment that goes on with that, it's essentially four major requirements when it comes to the state and federal regulations in terms of what type of safety standards a gas station needs to meet. The first of which, and really the most prominent, is the monitoring. In terms of the monitoring, QuickChek monitors in between the two walls of the underground storage tank. So there's what's called an interstitial monitoring between the two walls of the tank. There's also additional monitoring that happens at the sumps where gas product is dispensed into the underground storage tanks. There's also leak detection monitoring, which is a pretty sophisticated electronic monitoring system that actually monitors the product piping itself. There's, again, monitoring at the pumps under each dispenser is what's called a dispenser pan, which essentially is a containment area under each dispenser. So if there's any equipment associated with the dispenser, that pan is underneath as a redundant measure to collect or accumulate any of the product. Essentially, all of these monitoring areas are required by law to be monitored at the local facility. One of the distinguishing factors of QuickChek, being a relatively, what I'll call, small player in the gas industry and relatively a recent player in the gas industry, is they've actually taken it one step forward and actually monitor corporately as well at White House Station at their corporate headquarters in Reddington, out in Hunterdon County. So each station is actually monitored both locally in terms of the as required by state law, but in addition to that, should anything need maintenance, should any of the electronic systems monitor anything out of the norm, that information is also transmitted and immediately available at their headquarters in Reddington. It's what I understand, speaking of QuickCheck, is that they have essentially two people that are in addition on call via 24 hours a day, so one or two of the people. So essentially there is a 24-hour response team, so to speak, at the QuickCheck headquarters, which is essentially redundant. And from my understanding, although I don't know every gas operator, to my understanding, that is the only gas operator in the state of New Jersey that actually monitors in that fashion. So it truly is a distinguishing factor and really a result of it being a small, privately held company taking advantage, very technologically savvy, essentially taking the technology that's available today and employing it in this fashion.
Now, in terms of that, what you've just described in the canopy, here are some questions the board had had about lighting. Can you just describe, not from a design perspective, how it is that we assure lighting is properly directed, that there's no off-site spillage, and that we reduce glare?
Yeah, I mean, again, there's better products available today than obviously there were 10 years ago. QuickCheck uses all flush-mounted cut-off fixtures. The purpose of the cut-off is that there's essentially no light spillage over 90 degrees from the lights. So if you picture that, a light bulb standing directly up from the ground, there's no light spillage upwards, and actually there's pretty good technology in terms of the cutoff to limit its spillage over into adjacent properties. We do, by DOT requirement, have to have a 0.2-foot candle overspill onto the county right-of-way.
State right-of-way.
I assume we would employ a similar strategy in concert with the board engineer in terms of light spillover onto Ocean Boulevard. In terms of these fixtures, what we typically propose, the height under the canopy is only 14.5 feet. The area lights are at 18.5 feet, and there's some additional lights in and around the building at approximately 10 feet. So our light pole heights are moderate in my perspective, and just give you some feel, if you go to a Home Depot or Walmart, typical pole height would approximately be 40 feet. Maybe in a downtown, more pedestrian area, maybe more like 12 or 15 feet. So we're much closer to that lower level activity light poles with the 18.5 feet for the area lights and the 14.5 feet for the canopy. So with that moderate light height, as well as the type of fixtures utilized, we're able to get a pretty sharp cutoff at the property line. Of course, the light levels, we cannot, if you're looking at the site, you will see that the site is lit. You know, the point of these fixtures is to cut off the actual light levels when you're off the property. So the site will be lit. I heard a comment in terms of, is that related to security? In my opinion, yes.